Yes, it's recording. We're ready.
Good morning. My name is Tony Wynn, and I'm here with my two brothers, Don and Colin. And today is March of the year 2018. We're here to discuss our paternal grandparents, William Alexander Wynn, and his wife, Rosa Mae Frank. I'm facilitating this conversation mainly because I know very little about either one of them. Well, William Alexander died when I was 2 years old, and I did know Rosa. Later on, she became a dementia patient, but I know her a little bit, and she died in 1972. So we're going to start the conversation today. I think Collins, being the oldest brother, had more memories of them than either Don or I, and I know Don has some. So maybe we can start with Collins today. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Collins.
Collins, what do you remember about William Alexander Wynn? What do you know about him and his life?
Well, what I know directly is that I was a young boy, and you're right, I was about 8 years old when he died. So I had memories of playing with him and being around him and family picnics and that sort of stuff. And I got a couple of photographs of sitting in his lap and that kind of stuff. But they were kind of distant memories because of my young age, but I do have them. I remember a little bit about the funeral service there in a little church in the neighborhood where he lived with his family. And beyond that, not a whole lot of direct memories, although I think I know quite a bit. And how about you, Don? Do you have memories?
Yeah, I have pretty vague memories. I remember, you know, we talked earlier about a gas station he ran with our dad, and I remember going over to their house in the Lincoln area in Huntsville. I remember sitting on the porch and having events there, you know, with everybody sitting around talking. But really, I have really vague memories, and I don't know much detail about his life other than what you have told me through your research.
Yeah, you know, if I understand correctly, and I think I recall this correctly, that the day that he passed away, he was 60 years of age or so, I think maybe a couple of years more, but he had gone in the afternoon and I think was fully retired by then, and had laid down on a sofa to take a nap, and apparently had a heart attack and never got up. I don't know you know, if he laid there for a few minutes or an hour or what, but and that's how he passed away there at home, which to me seems to be a very peaceful thing to have happen to you. But when sometimes, you know, we go out and visit cemeteries and visit there at the Huntsville Memory Gardens with them and other members of our family. But one day, Don, about 20 years ago, maybe longer, perhaps when mother's was funeral or dad's funeral, I don't recall, but I happened to notice on his headstone, on his VA headstone, that they had a military inscription, and it said Company G 309 Infantry, World War I. And I thought to myself, dang, what is that? I'd never heard any such thing, all vague things about having maybe a VA pension or something like that, but I had no idea. And that didn't tell me much, but, you know, that's a little bit of a start. So sometime later on, at some point, I got curious enough to do a little bit of research into his unit history. And I was able to go back and look at his unit history of World War I. And he actually went to France as a doughboy, if you will. He was drafted, trained at Fort McClellan, was sent to New Jersey and assigned to the 77th Infantry Division. And shipped to France with them. But I don't have any record of how long he stayed there and what he did. All I know is what his unit did. But at some point, he was lucky enough to come home, and, you know, thankful for that. But he was injured. He was in a poison gas attack by the Germans, and it was chlorine, which is the gas that they used. Burned his lungs, and he was discharged and came home and drew a VA pension for most of his life. And that kind of injury would have sapped a person's strength to be able to do anything for a prolonged period of time. He just didn't have the lung capacity left to do that. So he operated service stations, gasoline service stations, for most of the rest of his life. And that's what I remember, Tony.
So he was probably involved in the trench warfare in World War I more than likely, and that's probably where he sustained his injury.
Oh, yeah, Tony. I would say more than likely. I'd say it was all those insurance, especially when his unit is Company G 309th Infantry of the 77th Infantry Division. So then, yeah, I mean, there's 99% possibility that he was involved in all of that stuff that we see, you know, in trench warfare and all those terrible things that happened.
Do you have a record?
Back in the time when they used force and gas a lot too, they didn't have any scruples about that at that time.
That's true, and of course he paid the price for that for his, all of his adult life. But he was born and raised in around Kenmore Cemetery, which is in Butler's Mill, Alabama, right in the middle of Big Cove in Madison County. Actually the line with Jackson County is right there in that area. But he was born and raised right there, and his grandfather was born and raised, his father was born and raised right there, and then his grandfather was born there as well. So this goes back a long way, I'd say probably till at least 1850 in that same area with his family. And he was a farmer, you know, that's what he did, worked in the fields with his family. We talked about that before. And I have no idea how he and our grandmother happened to meet, although probably at some social or something in the area.
Well, he lived, where he was born and raised was almost in the Tennessee, if you went east on Highway 72 through Scottsboro. And our grandmother, Rosa, she lived in Paint Rock, Gurley, that area, which is a little bit to the west of Scottsboro. So the two were probably separated by about 40 to 50 miles when they were
and who knows the events that they might have had some sort of family connection. And I don't mean related, but I mean socially, you know. And Rosa was lived for a while in Estill Springs. You're familiar with that, Tony. In Tennessee, yeah. And,
southern middle Tennessee, yes.
Yeah, just across the line there in Tennessee, so it's kind of all the same place, if you will. But they married young. They married as soon as he got back from the war. Then they were married and immediately started a family, you know. And, of course, we can tell that because we know about our uncles and aunts and dad, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had seven kids.
I'm sorry.
I believe they had seven kids. One died during childbirth, but the others all reached adulthood, and we'll talk about them in other sessions. But I think they were married, if I remember right, 16 years or something. They had seven kids in that period of time. So they had a large country family. I guess seven is not as big as what a lot of families would have then, but they did have a fairly large family.
Well, does either one of y'all remember when they moved to Huntsville or how they got there?
No, I don't. And Don, maybe I have an intuitive feeling, Tony, that like most everybody else, I mean, you know, Dad basically came to Huntsville after World War II. And I think maybe his dad had come a little before that, but they all, most of the country people, if you will, our ancestors, they all kind of migrated toward town, being Huntsville civilization, right? During that post-World War II period, so it could have been when he came as well.
Okay, what about Rosa, the Frame family? They were, like I mentioned before, they were from Gurley, Paint Rock, Woodville area. Do you know anything about them, Collins?
Yeah, I do. Actually, Tony, fairly extensive for three or four generations in all the branches of that. But you're right that the Frame family basically was from the area you talked about, Woodville, back up on what they call Nat Mountain, I think it is. But back up in the hills there around Paint Rock and Gurney and what have you, but mostly around Woodville, I think. Yeah, but anyway, back up in that area, and then on up a little bit north of that into Tennessee. And we have, she had a lot of family up there in Tennessee of names that we wouldn't recognize, except that we see it written, but not people that we would know, but the Johnson family, all kinds of other grandmothers and grandfathers that we really don't know anything about. So it was a large family as well there in that area. So, you know, the Wynn family, although I have to say William Alexander was actually, he was an only son, and he had two sisters. So his family was not large, but his dad died very young, probably in some sort of an accident. And so he lived most of his life without his own father. And but they were all in the same general area. And lots of them, we're related to a lot of people, even today, that I have contact with from time to time. And but all in that area up there, Tony.
Since from the information that you have, information you have gathered and that you have passed on to Don and I, our grandfather's father, our great grandfather, Joseph William Wynn, he died in like 1904. So that means he was in his mid-30s when he died.
Yeah, that's the reason I suspect that something untoward happened. You know, now, from time to time, there are epidemics, and certainly there was a flu, Spanish flu epidemic, but that was on up later, about 1915, 1918. And so that wasn't it, but it could have been some other disease, tuberculosis, for instance, or something like that. But I don't know of any record to say other than he did die young, you know, and other than that, I don't know anything.
Don, what do you remember about Rosa Frame, her grandmother?
Well, I remember a couple of things about when we'd have reunions or Christmas or Thanksgiving, we'd go over to their house in Lincoln and how they'd have a big spread of food, and I'd always like the banana pudding. I think that was one of the things that she always, I think she made. You know, she's just an unassuming woman. And I remember you were talking about when she had Alzheimer's or dementia, whatever, and she had to go in a rest home. I remember going in there and Mom would go over there and take Tony, you and I both probably at different times, right up until her death. But, and sometimes she would remember us and sometimes not. But I see some things in our Ancestry.com work that we've done that I have some questions about. One is about her mother. And I see that her mother, her name was William Ida Webb, I believe. Which seems strange to me to have a male name.
Yeah, I don't know any way to know the background of that, but she certainly did. And the Webb family name, the family of Webb, she was also from that southern Tennessee area, Don. And that's, you know, that's where she grew up, and that's the connections, and it all spreads out from there. But yeah, it's William Ida Webb. And sometimes when you do a little research, that can be a little confusing, but that is her name, yeah.
And I also saw that her father, Rosa's father, was a preacher.
Yeah, his name was Lorenzo Frame. He was a pastor, and I don't know that he had a church. I've never seen any reference to that, but he was a reverend, and his wife was Mary Ann McCain. And her mother, but they're all, you're right, they're all from that same general area, you know, around, say, Madison County and, what is it, Tony, in southern Tennessee, those two or three counties along the border there, so.
Well, you know, in those days, you know, transportation wasn't like it is now, so, you know, that was a pretty good circle of territory for them.
Yeah.
They couldn't travel as easy as we can now.
Well, everything was different. I think, you know, when you think about it, you know, you think farm or rural upbringing, it's probably hard for us to imagine what it meant to be on a farm in 1910 or 1920 or the 30s or 40s even, when everything was so rural and hard to communicate. You know, it didn't have the same telephone, and even probably the electric service was not as strong as it is now, you know, of course. So, and then the sheer distances. And I wonder when they first got a car. I wonder if Rosa's family had a car when she was growing up. And they may not have. They may have been strictly in wagons. I don't know anything about that part of their life. I just wonder about it.
I remember Rosa when I would go. At one point in time, Rosa and her daughter, Zelma, lived together over off of Meridian Street. And Zelma had a son, and I called him Butch, and for the longest time, I didn't even know his real name.
And Tony, I think that was, his name was Clyde Henry, I think.
Yeah, Clyde Henry, that's correct.
I called him Butch. Everybody called him Butch, so.
But I would go spend time over at their house, and I remember Rosa, of course, she was an elderly lady at that time, because we're talking, this was in the 60s, and early 60s at that. But I remember, one thing I remember about her is, you know, country people had different, almost like, they would think, call it a psychic ability or something, and she would read coffee grounds. She sipped her coffee, she would pour a cup of coffee, and it had a saucer, and she would pour the coffee into the saucer and drink it out of the saucer. And I'm assuming that was a way back then that they used to cool it off so they could drink it. But she would read the coffee grounds that were left in the bottom of the cup, kind of like somebody reads palms or whatever today. I do remember that about her. I always thought that was a little bit strange to me being a child. That seemed kind of almost creepy, let's say.
Yeah, well, I can understand why you'd feel that way, you know. And of course, but you're right, Tony. I think that's a product of a person's background and, you know, rural life and things like that. And, you know, it's like old legends people believed in, you know, fairy tales and this, that, and the other. And that's just part of it. You know, I was going to say, Don, I actually went with Mother to visit her a couple of times in that home that, I guess, a nursing home or whatever, assisted living facility, we'd call it today. And I went up with her to visit her once or twice, but I found it kind of awkward. And, you know, because I didn't know what to say. I mean, not having been prepped much to deal with someone like that, I mean, I didn't know what to say, and when she couldn't, I would say something, and when she didn't respond, I didn't know what to do, you know?
I can understand the awkwardness of that situation. That would be really strange. Don, do you have time? Can you tell us about visiting her in the home, if you had any of those same kind of feelings or thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I remember the same awkwardness that Colin just talked about there, but I remember, now this is not directly about Rosa, because some of the time she was aware and some not. I think she was mostly bedridden, if I remember. I don't remember her walking up down the hall or anything like that. But I do remember going down the hallway as you go in, there'd be these people in a similar sort of situation sort of lining the hall, and it just had such a horrible feeling, because those people were wanted to get some of your time, you know, just have somebody to talk to, you know, and I don't think it smelled very good. Now, that may be just, you know, just antiseptic or something like that, but I remember being real happy when we were leaving, because it was such an uncomfortable thing to do, to be there. But I thought that we went and spent time with her like that says a lot more about our mother than it does about Rosa, because our mother made sure that we spent time with her. And she wanted to make sure that Rosa knew somebody cared about her. And that's true. And she made a point.
Was Zelma her daughter that she had lived with that I remember? Was Zelma already passed when Rosa was in the nursing home? I can't remember.
No, actually, Zelma lived on for many years. In fact, only in the last, I think she died about 10 years ago. Don, do you think that's correct?
Yeah, I think she got married late in life, and I think she married a guy named Mancher or something like that, and I lost track of her, and as far as I know, she never had kids, and I think she died about 07.
Yeah, other than Butch, yeah.
Oh, yeah, she had Butch. But other than Butch, after she got married, finally, in late in life to Mancher, I don't think she had kids then. But she did have Butch.
That's true. So she was there in the Huntley area, but of course, all of us were gone, you know.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, she lived that long. I can't remember all these details. There's so many people involved. But I do remember when they lived over there off Meridian Street. Zelma and Rosa lived together, and Butch was there. And they also had two of Zelma's nieces, I believe, that lived there or came by and stayed for periods of time.
Yeah, Linda and Betty Jean, as we know them. Yeah.
All right, and they were.
Yeah, I remember that too. And of course, with Granddad being there, then that's a full house, you know. And so it'd be a lot of activity, a lot of people around. And of course, with Linda and Betty Jean being younger girls, you know, that'd probably be an interesting circumstances, right? With two young ladies growing up to through puberty, it'd be a little hard to manage, I would think.
I believe they would be a handful to be.
I'm sorry, Don.
I was going to say, I think their mother had passed, hadn't she? And that's part of the reason that they came and lived over there some of the time.
I believe so, Betty.
Their mother was part of the Wynn family, you know, the brothers and sisters. And she did die young, and I think it had to do with childbirth or something. And so they were kind of, the two girls were kind of left to their own devices with their father. And I think that's the reason that they wound up spending a good deal of time with their grandparents and their aunt, Zelma. Which was, you know, you got to thank those people and appreciate them for doing that, taking those two girls in and giving them whatever guidance that they could.
I think their father might have been pretty rough character. I think he might have been the roughest character in anybody in our family on either side. I don't know much about him, but I do think that he was wasn't the highest character, let's say. And so
I agree with that, Don. Of course, you know, and then we're talking about Rosa and her family. You know, she had a large family. She had many brothers and sisters. Rayford, Johnny. And there was a lady whose name won't come to me now, that was her sister. And so they had a fairly large family as well, the Frames, that is. And like I said, I still don't know what the draw to Texas is. And I probably at the time, sometime late 1800s, it'd been a draw to go west, young man, that kind of thing. And so something drew him out there, and then something drew him back. So it was an interesting time, I guess, for that family. And to wind up, Tony, I don't know anything about Estill Springs. Do you? You said you were familiar with it.
Yeah, it's in southern Middle Tennessee, just a little bit, just barely north of Winchester, Tennessee, which is in the county that borders Alabama.
Yeah.
And the thing about it now is they dammed up a river and built a lake there. Thames Ford Lake now covers a lot of that territory. So even if you could go back and find out exactly where they grew up, it's liable to be underwater now. It's just a pretty expansive lake. But the town itself is very small. it was a farming community because there's still old homesteads and farms all around there. But like I say, the lake took up a lot of that.
Yeah, okay. So, and then, but yeah, so they came from there on down into Alabama. And then, and their whole family, the Franks, all of them, to my knowledge, came into Alabama, you know, and that's why we have so many Frank relatives around and, you know, in local burials, local cemeteries of Franks.
You know, I remember when I was very young, Mama taking me on one of those visit trips out into the country and went in the Paint Rock area to visit somebody. And a big old White House with a wraparound porch, you know, like they, a lot of them had back in those days. And that tells me who we went to visit. It was probably one of the Frames that lived out that way.
Yeah, I would think so, yeah. I would agree with that, Tony. I think because it had it been, well, first of all, there weren't any winds. We had Cora and Aunt Florence, our grandfather William's brother and sister, but they lived basically in Huntsville, and one actually lived there on Whitaker Lake over near Guntersville and had married into the Whitaker family. So there weren't any winds to visit, really. So she was actually, yeah, I'm sure, visiting Frames.
Okay. What about the gas station? You said our grandfather, William Alexander, and our father, Collins, were partners in gas stations in Huntsville.
Yeah, well, I think one, if I recall correctly, now, and this is a vague memory because I was a real youngster at the time, but if I recall correctly, there was at the old Butler High School in Huntsville, which was eventually Stone Junior High, I think, and now has been either demolished or reused somehow. But anyway, there's an intersection right there, Governor's Drive, and is it East Clinton Street, maybe?
I think you're
but
right.
But anyway, there's an arrow kind of offset intersection. And they have a full-service little service station there with Alabama Oil Company, Amoco products, I think. And now, I don't know how long that lasted, but I remember both of them working there. And when Dad wasn't working, I'd be in a car with him sometime, and he would go by there for some reason. I guess that's the only reason I even remember that. So I don't know if it was a long-term arrangement or short-term, but I know that Dad was, up until the time he got involved in police work, that he was involved with in the fuel business in some way for years. You know, driving a butane gas truck, the service station there. Then he worked for Alabama Oil Company for a while as a long-haul fuel truck driver. So he was involved in that for years, and I think Granddad probably ran the gas station because that was what he was capable of doing physically.
Yeah, if his lung capacity was diminished, he would not be up for too much physical work.
Yeah, and, you know, in this case, it would be going out to fill up a car. It was full service, if you will. You know, to fill up a car and clean the windshield or something like that would be within the range of what he could do.
Okay. How are we setting on time, Don?
Well, we spent about 28 minutes. We probably need to just have our finishing comments aimed for about a 30-minute.
All right. Well, why don't you start with those comments, Don? Tell us what you want to say about our grandparents.
Well, there's a couple things. Just to think back about the service in World War I and how horrible that must have been. You know, we've seen the movies and things about being in some trench that's full of water, and suddenly somebody yelled gas, and some of them might not even had working gas masks, and how horrible it must have been to go through that. And if you survived, the guy next to you didn't. And the, you know, what that might have been like, but to be the military. We've got a photograph of him that appears to be in later in life, but in a military uniform. So it might have been some sort of military reunion or parade or something. But what I remember most is how family-oriented our grandparents were. You know, we had family reunions on the wind side of our family, I think, every year at the park up on top of Montesano Mountain. And all of these people, the frames would come, the winds would come, and we were always visiting people. So it just feels good that they had such a real strong family connection, you know, that they were all so closely, they stayed in touch so well and stayed involved in each other's lives. And I thought that's pretty impressive. But that's all I have about in the way of a summary.
Yeah, in fact, I do, Tony, and I appreciate the opportunity. I was going to say that, Don, I share your memories of those reunions there on Montesano. We have, between us, the three of us, we have numerous pictures, I'd say probably 15 or 20, from 1 or 2 years of those reunions up there. And, of course, we're all knuckleheads in these photographs, you know, showing off and that kind of stuff. But they're still, you're right. The photographs are give you a sense of closeness of these folks, and everybody's smiling and laughing and stuff. And you can tell that from the expressions that it's all genuine feelings, you know. And you're right, they were close. I think late in life, you know, all of that kind of dissipated. I suppose that they're just like it'll happen to our generation one day, but their generation slowly melted away. You know, but they left good memories for us, I think.
Well, those are very astute comments, and I don't remember these reunions as y'all might, you know, because I don't think I was alive for a while. But, you know, I don't know much about our grandparents, and I appreciate y'all bringing that to the forefront today so I can understand how our family was intermediate between the frames and the winds and the Brazeltons and all the other lines of our family. How it all intermixed together is interesting to me. And how they did, like both of y'all said, they knew not only their in-laws, but they knew their in-laws' children and their in-laws' children's children. You know, they knew all of those people, and they included them all as a big group. Doesn't seem like nobody was ostracized.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And some of them should have been, but none were.
Oh, well. Well, I appreciate y'all's time today, gentlemen, and this is really interesting, and maybe next time we'll carry on with our aunts and uncles on that side of the family or whatever y'all want to do, but thank you for your time today and your comments.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.